The Philippine Anti-Terrorism Council makes public its list of supposed terrorists in the country. The Campo Vice President, Lenny Robredo, denies she is abandoning a possible presidential bid next year. Robredo spokesperson, Attorney Barry Gutierrez, will join us later on in the program. Manila filing another diplomatic protest against Beijing over the presence of hundreds of Chinese ships in Philippine waters. And we'll discuss the effects of the COVID-19 crisis onto the Philippines' HIV epidemic with Eamon Murphy. He's UNAIDS Regional Director for Asia and the Pacific. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with this developing story. The Philippines' Anti-Terrorism Council publishes the names of those it has designated as terrorists. The release of the list came amid the oral arguments on the anti-terror law. Mike Navallo now joins us now with details. Mike, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. The Anti-Terrorism Council has designated Communist Party of the Philippines founding chair, Jose Maria Sison, and 18 others alleged CPP, New People's Army leaders, as terrorists based on a resolution published in newspapers today. 10 other members of different local terrorist groups who are allegedly members of the Abu Sayyaf group were also listed in a separate resolution. Now, without citing evidence or basis for the designation, the APC said it found probable cause based on verified and validated information that Sison and the 18 alleged CPP-NPA leaders were involved in planning, preparing, facilitating, conspiring, and inciting the commission of terrorism and recruitment to and membership in a terrorist organization. These acts are covered by Section 6 to 10 of the Anti-Terrorism Act. The APC resolution dated April 21 described the 19 individuals as central committee members of the CPP-NPA, the highest decision and policy-making body of the CPP, which also supposedly leads and commands the NPA, the main weapon to attaining the party's goal of overthrowing the duly elected government. ABS-CBN News is not naming these individuals until they are able to give their comments or until we're able to confirm the basis for their designation. In a statement, Sison said he is not bothered by his and his wife's designation as terrorists. The designation, he said, appears to be arbitrary, dubious, and contradictory or inconsistent with public and purportedly personal statements of the Anti-Insurgency Task Force, NTFL-TAF. He said those designated were mostly publicly known political consultants of the National Democratic Front of the Philippines Negotiating Panel, protected under the Joint Agreement of Safety and Immunity Guarantees, or JASIG, between the Government of the Republic of the Philippines and the NDFP, as well as by other bilateral agreements. At least 11 in the list of 19 are publicly known to be peace consultants. He urged the Supreme Court to invalidate the anti-terrorism law, which was the legal basis for the designation, an instrument, he said, of fascism and state terrorism. Bayan Secretary General Renato Reyes Jr., who was not among those designated, said the Anti-Terrorism Council's designation is arbitrary, has no clear standards, with no evidence presented and no specific terrorist acts cited. He said the rights of those designated will be violated, as bank accounts will be frozen without due process. Some of those designated were included in the prescription case filed by the Department of Justice in 2018 before a Manila court against the CPP-NPA under the Human Security Act. Of the more than 600 names the DOJ listed, the Manila court found only two to have undisputed links to the CPP-NPA, and that includes Sison, but only for the purpose of serving summons for the court to gain jurisdiction over the court. That petition was filed during the term of former Justice Secretary Vitaliano Aguirre, shortly after President Duterte signed a proclamation declaring the CPP-NPA terrorist organization. But his successor, current Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara, had said in 2018 that DOJ itself did not have any personal verification of any connection of these individuals with the CPP or the NPA. The prescription case is still pending, although the APC designated the CPP-NPA as a terrorist group in December last year. Unlike prescription, which is a judicial proceeding in court where alleged terrorist groups can present evidence, designation is exercised solely by the Anti-Terrorism Council, an executive body without the participation of the suspected terrorists. And some groups have raised concerns over the lack of transparency in the designation process. The Office of the Solicitor General on Wednesday said designation will only lead to freezing of assets and not to arrest. Under the Anti-Terrorism Act, those subject of a freeze order have 20 days to file a petition with the Court of Appeals to question the basis of the freeze order, while under the APA's implementing rules and regulations, a designated individual can ask to be delisted from the list at the Anti-Terrorism Council within 15 days. Carmina?
All right. Thanks a lot. Mike Navalio there joining us on the line. Appreciate it, Mike. Take care and keep safe. Moving on, the camp of Vice President Eleni Robredo denying the claim of former Senator Antonio Trillanes she is preparing to run for governor in Camarines Sur. Robredo's camp says she has not yet finalized her plans for next year's polls, but they add Robredo remains open to all options, including a possible presidential bid. Former Senator Trillanes admits he has asked the opposition coalition Isambayan to be considered as Robredo's alternate. That's if she decides against running in next year's presidential race. Trillanes adds the opposition cannot afford to lose by default.
In the scenario that, for example, the Isambayan coalition decides to choose VP Leni to be the standard bearer, and if she declines that nomination because of her decision to run for governor, then we wouldn't have any other candidate left to be chosen, at least those purely coming from the opposition.
Trillanes revealed so far only he and Manila City Mayor Isko Moreno have expressed willingness to become the opposition's presidential bet.
In the event that VP Leni would decline the nomination, then therefore by default, that position would go to Mayor Isko Moreno. He has yet to break away even from President Duterte, and in fact they are openly courting the endorsement of Mr. Duterte for 2022.
Well, let's talk more about what happened yesterday. Joining us now is Vice President Leni Robredo's spokesperson, Attorney Barry Gutierrez. Attorney Gutierrez, welcome to the program and thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here, Carmina.
All right, so what happened yesterday? Were you blindsided by the former senator's statements? Give us the inside story here.
Yeah, it was a surprise. The senator has actually been an ally, and he has been in communication with us periodically over the course of the past few years. He knows what the vice president's decision-making process is. He knows that the vice president is still very much open to running for president. So it was a bit of a surprise to see him come out and explicitly say that the vice president was already preparing to run for governor of Camarines Sur, which gave a lot of people maybe the unfortunate impression that she had already abandoned any intentions to seek the presidency in 2022, which is far from the truth.
Okay, Attorney Barry, a couple of things here. Number one, is she really considering running for governor of Camarines Sur? Is that part of the options that the vice president is exploring? Because when you look at the tweet of former Congressman Teddy Bagilat, this is what he tweeted yesterday. He said that first, that the VP is still running or is still interested in running for the presidency. And that second, you guys are preparing or working 24/7, organizing the machinery to prepare for that eventual run.
Yes. So what? Yeah, both of those things are true. To answer your first question, the vice president has made no secret of the fact that a run for a local position is one of the things that she has actually been considering over the course of the past year or so, ever since the talk of 2022 has started heating up. So that's still very much on the table. But that said, there have been no preparations insofar as pursuing an actual run at the local level is concerned. And Congressman Bagilat is perfectly correct when he says that insofar as the Liberal Party is concerned and the allies of the Liberal Party are concerned, there are already preparations being made by volunteers, by supporters, by local chapters to prepare for a possible presidential run in 2022. And obviously, the preferred candidate for such a run will be the Vice President. She is the chairperson of the Liberal Party. She is leader of the opposition. And she is obviously the person who embodies most what we feel should be embodied by a person who will be president of this country. She has demonstrated her ability to be an executive during the course of this pandemic, and we think she'd be a great president. So, you know, that's still the very much the default position that we are pursuing at this stage.
What about what Congressman Teddy Bagilet also tweeted yesterday? He said that the vice president is a registered voter of Naga, and that Naga doesn't vote for the governor of Kamsur, being a highly urbanized city. And therefore, he claims, as a Naga voter, VP Lenny cannot run for governor. Does that hold any water?
Well, I can speak to the factual assertion he made. Yes, the vice president is still a registered voter of Naga. She has not made any move to transfer her registration from Naga City to any other place. So she is still very much a voter of Naga City. My understanding is that Naga is an independent component city with its own charter, and that in previous elections, they have not really voted for any of the provincial officials being an independent component city. So I think that the points that he raised are correct.
Well, have you talked with former Senator Trillanes post the statement that he released yesterday?
I have not talked to him personally. In fact, one of the things that surprised me with the declaration of Senator Trillanes is that prior to making it, he did not attempt to, you know, he had no conversation with the vice president. And as I said before, we have been talking to him in the past. We are allies. We are on the same side on a lot of issues. So, you know, all this could have been resolved by him directly asking the vice president, "Are you running for governor?" And he would have received a very clear answer. There is no such plan yet. There are no preparations being made in that regard.
Sabi nga ni Congressman Teddy Bagilat, linggo-linggo daw magkausap kayo ng Mandalo.
If not directly with the vice president, and at least with other people within the opposition. Yeah.
So precisely this question, do you feel, or does the vice president feel, that with what former Senator Trillanes did yesterday, that was basically tantamount to undercutting the process that the vice president has right now?
Well, let me put it this way. I understand, and I think that the vice president understands where Senator Trillanes is coming from. He just wants to be sure that come 2022, whatever Vice President Lenny Robredo decides, there will be a single candidate that the opposition can rally around, and that candidate will embody what we feel should be represented by any candidate running against this particular administration. And if you look at the rest of his statement, it's pretty clear that what he's saying is, in the event the vice president ultimately decides that she will not run for president, then, you know, I am willing to step up. And he has been fairly consistent on that. And, you know, I'll give that to him. But what I will say is that while I understand that there is a certain level of impatience, there is a certain, you know, eagerness on the part of not just the senator, but a lot of our supporters for the VP to immediately make a declaration now, I would just hope that they respect the process she is going through. Nakakatawa lang kasi ito eh, di ba? Dahil inis na inis tayo sa mga taong atat-atat na tumakbo, di ba? We look down on people who seem so eager to run for president. But when you get somebody like the vice president who says that, you know, I really have to think about this. This is something that I have to reflect on. We are so eager to push her in the opposite direction. Now na. Dapat ngayon na. So, you know, my appeal is not just to the senator, but to all our supporters who are, you know, eager to see the vice president make a decision. She is taking this very seriously. Right now, she is still focused on doing what she can to help us out through COVID-19. But she will decide. To be clear, this is on her mind. She has not forgotten it. She is not making light of it. But this is not an easy decision, and it should not be an easy decision.
This is the question, Attorney Gutierrez. So what is keeping the vice president from deciding on what's going to happen in 2022?
I think there are multiple factors. Like in 2016, one of the factors is obviously her family. It is not easy for somebody like the vice president, who has never been a professional politician, and who, you know, has a very, very close relationship with her daughters, to just make this decision off the cuff without regard to how it will affect her family. Remember, in 2016, one of the reasons why she took so long before she actually declared her intention to run for vice president at that time was she needed to get her family on board. So I think that's one of the things that's still very much on her mind. Another thing is the consideration of whether or not she will really be the most unifying and winnable candidate for the opposition. It's clear that she, for my perspective at least, and for the perspective of many others, that she is that person. But mm-hmm. she has to go through that process herself. The 2022 elections is something she views as very important for our country. And she wants the best person to step forward, the person with the biggest chance to actually unify the broadest base of people to rally around that particular candidate to ensure our success in 2022, and that's something she's still reflecting on.
So to be clear, Attorney Gutierrez, the options are gun for the presidency in 2022, set her sights on the governorship of Camarines Sur, and what else?
Well, obviously, just going back to regular civilian life is always on the table, and exercise her leadership, not as a public elected official, but in some other capacity, as a private citizen, as a civil society leader. After all, you'll remember, even before she entered politics, she was a public interest lawyer. She did champion various causes in a private capacity, not as a public official. So she can always go back to that. And although, you know, I personally am very eager and excited to support and campaign for Vice President Robredo in a presidential campaign, I respect the fact that this is a decision that she is giving a lot of thought to, and she has to decide for herself.
You say that this is part of the process of the vice president, but some are of the opinion that this is the vice president playing coy. What do you say to that?
I've known the vice president for, you know, the better part of a decade now, ever since we were in Congress. And coy is not something that I would ever attach to her as a descriptor. She is plain spoken. She is very direct. She will tell you what she feels and what she believes. She's a straight shooter. She will never play coy. My honest understanding here is that this is really a weighty decision, and she is really trying to navigate it as best as she can. She's trying to balance what she feels are the very, very clear imperatives for the nation on one hand, balanced with, you know, her own personal considerations with respect to her family. And of course, balanced with, you know, the political consideration of what will really be best for the opposition in this particular case. But as in the past, she has always demonstrated that she is willing to take on, any challenge. Like when we accepted the challenge to take on leadership of the anti-drug campaign way back in the latter part of 2019. So, you know, it's clear. If and when the time comes, she will make the decision, and she will step up to the plate. But we have to give her the opportunity. opportunity and the time to go through her own process.
Well, let's get into that. As a final question, in a tweet you sent out yesterday, you said that the vice president will convey her decision at the appropriate time. When is that appropriate time?
Well, you know, I cannot really speak to that. In previous interviews, she has said that maybe August, maybe September. Frankly, I don't even think that you know, she, if you ask her directly, she can tell you. She's going through the process. But what I am sure of is that this is something that she is taking very seriously. And that definitely she will come to a decision on this. This will not just drag on and, you know, without a solution. She will at one point give a very, very clear, unequivocal declaration as to what her intentions are. And when she does that, you can be assured that when she, before she did so, she weighed all these in her mind, and that she will give the best possible decision she thinks should be made under the circumstances.
Attorney Bag Gutierrez, spokesperson for Vice President Lenny Robredo, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. Take care and you keep safe.
You too, Carmina, anytime. Stay safe also.
Thanks. Appreciate it. And as we say goodbye to Attorney Gutierrez, we're now going to bring in Attorney Michael Henry Yusinkos. He is Senior Research Fellow of the Ateneo School of Government. We're going to ask him his take on this development in the opposition coalition. Attorney Yusinko, nice to see you again, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Carmina. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Good afternoon to our viewers.
Okay, so what signal does this statement coming from Senator Antonio Terranes give the VP and the public? You just heard Attorney Barry Gutierrez there say that they were actually surprised that the former senator came out with a statement, but I want to get your take on that.
So first, kudos to Senator Terranes for his forthrightness. Now we know where he stands. Now we know what his plans are, what his ambitions are, what his intentions are. He gets it, you know, he gets it that the 2022 elections is a fight for our lives. So I appreciate his coming out with that challenge or with that declaration that he intends to run in 2022. Now, if that sends a signal to the camp of the VP, I do not know if that was intentional on the part of Senator Terranes. No? I just heard Attorney Gutierrez, and it seems to me that they were surprised that Senator Terranes would say those things or make those declarations. Now, regardless of the intention of Senator Terranes in relation to the VP, I think the declaration exposes really the fragility of the coalition.
Why do you say so?
Because it's pretty obvious that even though, as mentioned by Congressman Bagilat and also by Attorney Gutierrez, that they were in constant communication or they are in constant communication, that communication does not bode well for a unified plan of attack in 2022, because it seems to me that Senator Terranes had a different idea of what the Liberal Party's plans are. Mm. And here's also
here's the thing though, Attorney Yusinko, I'm sorry to cut you there. At one point during his statement, he said that he is not dividing the opposition. That in fact, he said he will step aside when the VP decides to gun for the presidency. But the question is, if that's in your mind, why even come out with a statement?
That's true. That's a very good question to ask Senator Terranes. In fact, I have another question to ask him. Why even put yourself as a mere alternate to VP Lenny? I thought the process of Isang Sambayanan was to choose the right candidate for the opposition, for the United Opposition. Why is it that everyone is presuming that is VP Lenny? Shouldn't there be a process of choosing the right one? So shouldn't he be subjecting himself to that process together with VP Lenny, together with Mayor Isko, and then let the supposedly elders of the coalition choose the candidate that should, that ought to unify the opposition, right? So there are also a lot of questions that we need to ask Senator Trillanes about his declaration. But at the very least, we know where he stands. And I think citizens should appreciate that. Because now, if you want to support Senator Trillanes in his cause, then you can. You can reach out to him. You can help him formulate his policies and his programs. Right now, he's the only candidate that can accommodate that, right? Because he's the only candidate who has declared the intention to run, to lead the country.
Do you think, though, Attorney Yusinko, that this should be enough for other would-be contenders to get nudged and throw their hat into the ring as well? Like Vice President Lenny Robredo, do you think that, you know, there's also a part here that the former senator did this to sort of nudge the vice president to finally make that declaration?
Well, I don't want to put the motivation behind the declaration without really talking to Senator Trillanes or without asking him directly. He himself can answer that question. But his declaration, I think, taking it as it is, is a challenge to the VP to act now, right? To say what your plans are. I mean, we know that you are a presidentiable. We know that you can be a great executive. Your record speaks for itself. In fact, you are the only bright light in this administration in terms of dealing with this COVID pandemic. So with all of these good performance, with all of these remarkable contributions to the country the past 5 years, it boggles my mind why you can't make a declaration for those who are waiting for that certainty.
So let me take that a little further. Obviously, you're one of those impatient ones that Attorney Barry Gutierrez is pertaining to in her earlier interview. How long do you think can the vice president do this? Her spokesperson said at the appropriate time, she will convey her decision to the public. When is that appropriate time?
I can't really say when is the appropriate time. No, I think to me, what's more bothersome here is that more and more people will eventually think that she doesn't get the importance of 2022 if she delays making the declaration. That's why I said that Senator Trillanes gets the importance of 2022 because he wants to galvanize support, because the Duterte brand is a formidable brand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's taking a beating this past couple of weeks, but you know, he's chosen one, or whoever is going to run under his banner will be a tough foe to beat. So we have to start working now, right? If we want to have a regime change or an administration change. So more than really finding the appropriate time, I think the delay in making the declaration can open the interpretation that the VP doesn't get how important, how urgent we need leadership for 2022.
What about the belief, Attorney Yusinko, that now, in the time of this pandemic, is not the time for politics? What do you say to that?
Well, that's kind of a disingenuous statement, no? Because everything in our country is political. Whether it's pandemic, whether there's a pandemic or not, everything is political in our country. So to me, the declaration of that intent to run in 2022, even if made in a pandemic, is still acceptable. It's political for sure. Definitely it's political, but it's still acceptable for me. And in fact, I would appreciate that because precisely because I know where that person who declared it stands, and it pushes the onus on me then to decide whether I would support that person or not. If I would support that person, then I would also start thinking of acting, right? Of making choices and making decisions for 2022. So the certainty helps the citizens as well. So it's not just about the candidate, but it's also about the voters who can mobilize, whether against or for the candidate declaring.
Right. Final two questions for you, Attorney Yusinko. How important is it that the opposition present a united front this early?
Look, let me clarify first. No, I'm not saying that they can declare a unified front this early. But what I'm trying to say is that they shouldn't shy away from saying that they want a unified front, right? They should be open about it and they should be candid about it. Mm. Now, it's important for the opposition really to work on having that or achieving that unified front. It's because we want to avoid a repeat of 2016. That's the ultimate goal here, that we want 2022 to be a fight between the administration, mano a mano, with the opposition. Mm-hmm. And declaring now the intent of opposition candidates could actually work towards achieving that unified opposition. Because now we can fight it out, or they can fight it out amongst themselves. That's why I'm curious why Senator Trillanes said that he's placing himself or putting himself as an alternate. Mm-hmm. I thought when the One Sambayanan was launched, that they will be undergoing a selection process. So,
to be fair, as soon as... right after that tweet was sent out, or that statement was sent out by Senator Trillanes, Isambayan also came out with a tweet giving more details about their selection process and how it's going to start, I think, in a few weeks. So that that was also sent out, although after Senator Trillanes sent out his tweet. Finally, Attorney Yusinko, can you call this a slip-up on the part of the opposition, and can they afford more of this?
Well, I wouldn't classify it as a slip up or a mistake, but certainly they should avoid this kind of miscommunication or misunderstandings amongst themselves, no? Because it really just shows how fragmented this coalition truly is. So, as Attorney Gutierrez earlier intimated, after hearing Senator Trillanes' declaration, really the LP closed ranks, right? Sort of possibly hinting that they will field their own candidate because they feel that the best opposition candidate is the VP. And that goes against the very ethos of the coalition, which is really to select the right and unifying candidate for the opposition. So they should avoid these kinds of miscommunication and misunderstanding amongst themselves.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Attorney Michael Henry Yusinko, legislative and policy consultant. He's also senior research fellow at the Ateneo School of Government. Always a pleasure talking to you. You keep safe. Take care.
Thank you, Carmina, and keep safe as well.
Thanks. Appreciate it. We're going to take a break now at this point. Coming up, President Rodrigo Duterte accepts the resignation of Nayong Pilipinos Executive Director amid a spat over a proposed mega vaccination hub. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. we're back. Here's still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippine Anti-Terrorism Council makes public its list of supposed terrorists in the country. The camp of Vice President Leni Robredo denies she is abandoning a possible presidential bid next year. Her spokesperson says it is not an easy decision and urges Robredo's supporters to respect the process she is going through. And Manila filing another diplomatic protest against Beijing over the presence of hundreds of Chinese ships in Philippine waters. $15,000 more doses of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine arrive in the Philippines. These vaccines will be used as second doses for residents of Makati, Manila, Muntinlupa, Parañaque, and Taguig. All in all, the Philippines is expected to receive 10 million doses of Sputnik V. But Vaccine Chief Carlito Galvez Jr. notes the deal is expandable to 20 million shots. President Rodrigo Duterte has accepted the resignation of Nayong Pilipino Executive Director Lucille Karen Malilong Esperto. Malilong Esperto was among the first to oppose the planned mega vaccination hub at Nayong Pilipino. She claimed hundreds of trees would have to be cut down at the site. Amid this concern, Cabinet Secretary Carlo Nograles said the construction of the proposed facility will push through.
It's a reclaimed land. It's just sitting there. It's not being utilized. It seemed like an appropriate site in terms of accessibility, especially because it's NCR plus. Mahirap kasi maghanap ng lupa ngayon. And of course, we're exploring every possibility. No? The DOT conducted its due diligence naman. And based on their reports to us, hindi naman po totoo na may lush forest na tatamaan dyan.
Meanwhile, ICTSI Chairman Enrique Razon says the Nayong Pilipino facility will provide a much-needed boost to Manila's slow vaccination drive. He adds the hub will be accessible to the public and will inoculate as much as 10,000 people per day.
It's very suspicious. We must have interrupted some ongoing deal. There's always a motive behind that. This site is perfect for what we plan, which we learned with the mega quarantine center. It's connected to the skyway, so it's very easy for people to come. The roads are wide. There's a lot of empty land, so there's no people traffic. There's no pedestrian traffic whatsoever here. But, you know, the government has to build other sites. I mean, we cannot survive on just one site. Meta should be used. PICC should be used. Araneta Coliseum should be used, and many others. How are we going to inoculate 70 million people with just one site?
Now, speaking of the big dome, one of the country's biggest stadiums is set to become a temporary COVID-19 vaccination site. Beginning Saturday, mass inoculations will be held at the Smart Araneta Coliseum in Quezon City. The Araneta Group said it will also send its own medical personnel to help in the vaccination. Around 1,000 to 1,500 jabs are expected to be given at the Araneta Coliseum each day. Well, as early as last year, in the early days of the pandemic, it was already clear people living with HIV are particularly vulnerable during the time of COVID-19. Today, we check in on the impact the COVID crisis has had on the Philippines, where an HIV epidemic has been declared a national emergency since 2017. Joining us now, Eamon Murphy. He's the UNAIDS Regional Director for Asia and the Pacific. Mr. Murphy, good afternoon to you, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into this discussion. How would you describe what is happening to people living with HIV here in the Philippines during this time of the pandemic?
The Philippines, like many countries, is having severe reversals of the response to HIV. We've seen a decline of 61% in testing. And this is data coming from the Department of Health itself. 28% drop in those able to access antiretroviral therapies, the life-saving treatments. Service interruption in a whole range of ways. But at the same time, we've also seen some really strong innovations in the Philippines that's helping to change, diversify the model of implementation. But severe impact on the epidemic here and across many other countries.
What led to that? I mean, what were the challenges? What are the challenges on the ground that resulted to, number one, 60% decline in testing and the retroviral meds not being accessible to those already living with HIV? Mr. Murphy.
The challenges are multifaceted. Firstly, of course, the health personnel. There's a limited number of health personnel. There are a lot of expert public health practitioners working on HIV and disease control. So, of course, they've been asked to help with COVID. That's quite normal. And many countries we've seen the same. That then, of course, reduces the availability of the staff. But it also, in a time of lockdowns, people are not going into clinics where they may feel they're at risk of COVID or to access services in what we call fixed sites. So the model has to be to have mobile approaches. And so telemedicine, which the Philippines is using both for COVID and for HIV, outreach where delivery of antiretrovirals to those already tested and on treatment, that's there. But for those who are concerned about their HIV status, they can't access the testing as easily. So that's why 60% drop. That's a real worry when you've got the fastest growing epidemic in Asia and the Pacific and one of the fastest growing epidemics in the world in the Philippines. So the collision of these two pandemics is having a negative knock-on effect to the HIV epidemic already there.
When the pandemic is over, what do you think will be the result? How will this pandemic leave the HIV epidemic here in the Philippines?
I fear there will be a severe impact because the Philippines had really good legislation. It was moving new legislation, world class, moving to implement these new policies and approaches. That's now been set back by COVID. But the opportunity of the innovations that the ministry, and I had the pleasure of meeting with Secretary Duque yesterday and other members of the National AIDS Council of the Philippines with our executive director from Geneva, Ms. Bianima. And during that, we heard about the innovations, the telemedicine, the outreach models that are there, and that's what's going to need to be scaled up and implemented rapidly. So that means resources and significant resources, including adjustments to procurement law. So social contracting of civil society groups can help the government catch up and put this in place permanently. Multi-month dispensing of treatments rather than having to come in every month. These are some innovations that need to be maintained and it'll help catch up, but it's going to be concerning that numbers will increase again in the Philippines and other countries as a result of COVID.
These system innovations that you mentioned, are these easily, can these be easily institutionalized?
Absolutely. And the most critical new prevention technology the Philippines is introducing, pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a medical treatment to build up an immunity to prevent transmission of HIV. That is a critical tool, and that's what the government, one of the most important, to institutionalize that in the mix of programs of combination prevention. But then the other service delivery models are there, not just for HIV, but for other health issues, and this will really reform support the Department of Health's reform agenda for health services.
Tell us about the situation on the ground. You mentioned numbers a while ago, again, 60% decline in testing. This epidemic was declared a national emergency in 2017. But today, in the year of 2021, what's the situation? Is it only concentrated in urban areas, or has the epidemic found itself also in rural areas, Mr. Murphy?
Okay. It's very important to understand in the last 10 years, and the spike of this is in the last 5 years, we have 237% increase in new infections in the Philippines. So over 110,000 people living with HIV. At the same time, 450% increase in people dying from HIV when they don't need to today with life-saving treatments that are available. So these are serious issues. It is certainly concentrated in urban areas. Metro Manila is the epicenter, but there are 47 other hotspots, including Cebu. So it's well known where it is. The challenge here is, as the services, especially at the local government unit level, are not being expanded and reaching those who need it, we're going to see an explosive situation, particularly with COVID impact. So we really need those local government units to work with the central government to expand services rapidly and use the community to reach the people who are concerned about coming into facilities, fear of COVID and stigma and discrimination issues combined. And that's a really unfortunate recipe.
And let's talk about vaccination now before we let you go. Where are we in terms of that? I was able to talk to one of the leaders of the community here in the Philippines a couple of months back. And at that time, they were really pushing that they also be included in the priority list, people with comorbidities, so that they can be vaccinated at the soonest possible time. Where are we in terms of that?
I understand that is moving. And so people, I know of people living with HIV in the Philippines who have been vaccinated. So I believe that's moving. The real challenge, though, are the people who don't know their HIV status. And that's why the two pandemics need to work together. We need to get that testing level back up, use self-testing, get test kits to people in their homes rather than have them come into clinics so they know their status. Because if you have immune deficiency because of HIV, but you don't know it, you're not on treatment, the impact of COVID is going to be much worse. People on treatment, evidence is showing that they have similar issues as other people in the population, unless they have comorbidities. And tuberculosis would be one of the most critical of those, given the nature of COVID. So this is why it's critical that the two programs need to work together.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Mr. Eamon Murphy, UNAIDS Regional Director for Asia and the Pacific, appreciate you joining us, zooming in from Bangkok. Thanks again. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you very much.
The local government of Zamboanga City appealing to the national government to extend the period of its modified enhanced community quarantine. The city is under MECQ until May 14 as rising COVID-19 cases continue to overwhelm its healthcare system. The city has over 2,000 active cases as of Wednesday.
We are appealing, sana po ma-extend.
Ma-extend pa.
Kasi ito pong hinihiling po talaga ng ating mga ospital. Sa ngayon po, may nakapila pong mga tao at puno na rin po yung mga hospital. So the DOH will be increasing their support to local government para magkaroon po tayo ng mga modular hospitals.
The Philippine Interior Department disagreeing with assessments, contact tracing is the weakest link in the country's COVID-19 response. DILG Undersecretary Jonathan Malaya claims the country is in a good position when it comes to tracing contacts of COVID-19 patients. Government has hired 5,000 additional contact tracers to boost its efforts.
Kami po sa DILG have never believed na ang ating contact tracing is the weakest link. No? Actually, we disagree. In fact, doon po sa ating EDITR strategy, sa tingin ko po ang pinaka-weakest link natin is yung ating prevention. Kaya nga po tayo nanghuhuli ng mga kababayan natin hindi sumusunod sa mga minimum health standards dahil nandun po madaming violation.
Malacanang and even the country's contact tracing chief Benjamin Magalong previously admitted contact tracing is the country's weakest link in its pandemic response. They blame local governments for not being equipped enough. In other news, Manila's top diplomat orders the filing of yet another diplomatic protest against China. That's after the National Task Force for the West Philippine Sea reported the presence of 287 Chinese maritime militia vessels within and outside the Philippines' exclusive economic zone. Foreign Affairs Secretary Teodoro Loxin Jr. earlier vowed to file a diplomatic protest every day until the last Chinese ship is gone from the area. Beijing, however, claims it is maintaining close communication with Manila on the maritime row. China's foreign ministry adds the two countries are committed to properly handling the issue through dialogue and consultation. The International Olympic Committee not thinking of canceling the Tokyo Games for now. That's despite opposition from a majority of residents as the country is currently battling a surge of COVID-19 infections. Recent surveys have shown the public would rather have the events canceled or postponed. 300,000 people have signed a petition calling for the scrapping of the games. Organizers, however, have or are undeterred.
There has been a small extension of the emergency situation, but we continue to plan for full games, and that's the way it has to be, and that's the only way it can be for us. When the games happen, and when the Japanese people can be the proud hosts of an event which really will be, it's an overused word, but really will be an historic moment, bringing the world together after this terrible moment.
The Tokyo Olympics is set to begin in July. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it here on ANC.